Yes. We are at the Gemara on Daf Tzadik Tes Amud Aleph after having finished the Mishnah discussing what is Mechayev the Shoel, whether it's the actual receipt in his own Rishut, or whether if he specified or if he agreed to the specification of the Mashiel that the animal in question should be sent by a particular individual, which includes, by the way, a servant. If he agreed to that stipulation, or if he made that stipulation, then he would be chayav the moment that that servant takes it, is what it seems to be saying. But that's very problematic. Because
the Mashiel servant is wrong.
But the part that's problematic is that the Mashiel servant, because the servant is only an extension of the master. So as an extension of the master, there never was a change in the Rishut of where the Korah was. So how could, with what possible mechanism would it be chayav at that point where it never left the Rishut of the Adam because the servant is still taking care of it? So that's the Gemara, Biyad Avdo Chayav. How could that be? Yad Evik Yad Rabo. Why does the Mishnah say that the Shoel agreed or said, send it in the hands of your Evet me, but at that point the Shoel would be chayav in any accidents that happen along the way if it was never Yotzei from the Rishus of the Mashiel? Amar Shmuel, well, the Evet over here is not an Evet Kanani. The Evet over here must be referring to an Evet Ivri. An Evet Ivri over there, the owner does not own the hand of the Evet Ivri. He's not an extension of the master. He's simply an indentured worker, basically. Rav Amar Afilo Teinu Evet Kanani. Rav says, look, the Pashas of the Mishnah is the Evet. Means Evet means Evet Kanani. So how then does it work that he should be Mechuyam? Naasek Omerle, who kisha akisha b'makel, it's as if we said to the man, why don't you just give it a patch on the rum? Let it run, and it'll just chew it in my direction. It'll come over. Now, in general, we have to note that there are some strange mechanisms going on over here. Because, in general, just the agreement that somebody should send something to me should not be machayishin. Look, did I sign? Did I write a contract? Or did I told them? How does that work? So there are many Rishonim that learn, very fascinatingly, and almost everyone agrees that at this point, for sure we have to say, because here we're talking about when nothing was done. If you hit it on the rump and he'll come to me and I'll be hired. There's nothing. They learn very interesting shots. But the reason that I'm hired is because I become a guarantor. In other words, if I tell you, lend money to so-and-so and I guarantee the loan, I don't have to sign anything. The fact that you acted on my request and gave out the money is considered to be a smichut das that I am feeling very good about this too. And therefore I'm a kavala for you, no money. So the same thing is true over you. And I say, send your animal out to me. Don't worry about a thing. I'll take responsibility. I become an arev even though I didn't make a kinyan. But not because I'm a shoel. The Shoel would be chayav because he's an arev for the Sheilah that will be when he gets possession. But since the person has released the animal on my say-so, it's as if I guaranteed that the Shoel happens to be myself. But it's the same mechanism. Because the person is ready to act on my say-so, I'm Gamer God to be Makabal Afrayu.
You're only acting on my say-so because it's going to you.
Yeah. Correct.
You're
show, right, but you're also acting as a guarantor for your own Sheilah. So you don't need to do the formal act of acquisition that the Sheilah normally would need to do. You don't need to do. Because up until the point of acquisition, you're also a guarantor that the Sheilah will take place.
From the
Baal's
point of view, it's totally different. You're not coming in guaranteeing
it,
but you're actually
asking. No, but I'm saying two separate things. I'm saying I want to borrow your car. And I'm telling you how to get it. Like, just release it. Don't worry about it. When you say that to a guy and he releases it based on what you said, it means that you're guaranteeing it to him. It's like a guarantor of a loan. Over here it's a guarantor of a shayla. It has to be the same person. Anyway, not everyone agrees with that, but many of you have shown them that that's the mechanism over here.
There's an ordinary person in his house with somebody.
You have to do the shayla.
Right. Can I tell him to give it up on my behalf?
No.
That's not the
no,
sort
of thing. No, it has to be Mashiach. I would have to do it because you're the guy that's supposed to be making, you're the Machneh. Somebody else you could ask, but certainly not the Machneh.
Not the Baal.
Right, and over here it's the Machneh that's doing it, right? And the Eved we view as an extension of that Machneh. If we're talking about that we're an Eved
Shlemah. I'm thinking in the Shlemah on my behalf.
I can't. You can't have the same person doing the Hakna'ah and the Kinyan. So over here, the only problem is that the Eved is also there. Fine, but that doesn't... Sure, you want to send along the Eved, that's very nice. But as far as I'm concerned, it's the equivalent of saying, just believe, and I'll take care of it. In other words, it doesn't make it worse, the fact that the Eved is there. It's a very innovative check, because Rav is saying, it's not that the Eved is the one that affects the transfer, it's that the Eved doesn't bother the transfer. But the real point is that all I've said is, basically, just release it, I'll take care of it. Amazing. So we ask now on this shot of Rav. It says in the Braisa something different than it says in the Mishnah. It says, HaShoel et hapara, v'shalchalo v'yad v'no v'yad shlucho, chayav v'yad abdo patur. Now here it says if you send it in the hands of your Eved, it would be potter. Obviously it's talking about that he agreed, because otherwise the first part also doesn't make sense. So according to Shmuel, we could say there's no problem, because the Mishnah that says you're chayav was referring to an Eved Ivri, according to Shmuel. So the Braisa that says Eved Sam, that you're patur, is actually fulfills our expectations. That's what we figured. You send it with an Eved Tzadi, but it's just an extension of the Yad of the Adon. So why would you be chayav? And indeed, that's why it says you're patur. But Rav, who says that both the Mishnah and the Braisa were referring to an Eved Tzadi, how does he explain in the Braisa why you were potter, whereas in the Mishnah you were chayav? Since according to Rav, we assume that the statement, send it with your Eved, means hit it on the rump and send it over here. It doesn't really mean that the Eved should be the one that gets it there. Rav, what Rav would say to you is, let's amend your understanding of my statement. Lo tema na'atek ka'amalei. Don't read that as, well, it's always the equivalent of having said, give it a knock on the rump and send it over this way. Learn that the Mishnah that says that the Eved, you could send it with the Eved, means you could just really hit it on the rump and send it over here. And that's okay. So in other words, the fact that the Eved is along doesn't bother us. I think in the Braisa, the guy did not say that. The guy said, send it with your Eved. If he says, send it with your Eved, then indeed it never left the Rishus of the Mashiach, because the Eved is an extension. So it's fine, that's two different cases. One in which the Eved is an adjunct, and one in which the Eved is the actual transfer. And the Eved can't transfer, and therefore it doesn't do anything. And for sure, this is true that Rav, I mean, even though we're putting these words into Rav's mouth, Rav definitely would hold about the statement of Ikisha the Makel, the Itmar. Hashileni paratcha, the Omar le biyad mi. Somebody says, lend me your para, and the lender says, well, how should I get it over to you? The Omar le, Hakisha the Makel the Tavo, just hit it on the rump and it'll come over here. Omar Nafu, Omar Barbu, Omar Rav, the moment that it leaves the door of the Mashiel, it would be fired on the part of the Shoel. And this is Rav who's saying it. You see? But the actual statement of Akisha B'Makel is definitely Makayah. The name of the Tayele, shall we say that we can prove Rav's contention from the following Braisa, where it says, Hashileni Parakha, V'omalei Biad Mi, V'omalei Hiki Akisha B'Makel V'Yitavo. That sure sounds like it's exactly the same case in Abana, huh? Word for word, the case that Rav says, and the case in the Braisa. And the Gemara saying, Lema B'Sayel, when the Braisa says the Farish, even she asked him, Meshut Mashil V'Neit HaKayev, I mean, Rav might just as well have crib this in the Braisa, right? When he says, Lema B'Sayel, and yet surprisingly, it says, Ravashi, no, you can't put the right from there. Why not? You know what the Braisa may be referring to, and therefore you can't use it as a proof to Rav's general statement of this effect. It might be referring to Gizon Shahayetak HaFeroz Shoel Nismin Min HaFeroz Shomashil. We may be referring to a case where the borrower chaser is encircled by the lender chaser. And therefore, once it's aimed in that direction, it's got only one place that it can go. Into my chaser. Therefore, I rely on the fact that you say that's Mihudga. That over there, if the guy says, okay, suspend it, obviously we have to be referring to a case, just points out, that there was some area in between that was not, it was not Rosh Hashanah, because it's encircled, but it was owned by others, right? And nonetheless, because otherwise, once you come to my chaser, I'd be going over the chaser, Because the finish of the year would be the moment it leaves the rishus, the chaser of the mashiel, of the lender, even though it's not in the rishus of the borrower, it's still going to be chayav during that interim period. Why? Because here, same mechanism, but maybe only because in this case it's only got one way to go. Mashenke, normally you could say, you know, Pikishu Makel, the guy thinks, yeah, I don't know, maybe my genius. He's going to take for him to go somewhere else. So maybe over there you could say he's not going to that boat, except he's not believing for such a thing. Therefore, you can't really prove it. I mean, obviously there's no, you know, this is just conjecture, but you certainly can't prove something where we don't know the details of the case. But because the Gemara, but then what would it mean? I mean, then there's no chidush in it, is there? You have to mile a main ram in there. If it's going directly from one to the other, I mean, so then is there a chidush in that? Well, it looks like a big gezeit. There are corners that it could hide out in. Maybe it could fall into a well in between. I mean, there's things that could happen to it. We were talking about a case where it's not just a nice manicured lawn, but this sweet little Barry had a little lamb was cropping the lawn for him. I mean, he's in the middle of a field, and you know, with mountainous areas with holes that could get him, and so on. So, ma'udatem alosam kabate. I might think even in such a case, he was really afraid something might happen to it. So, because Dilma Kai Mahatam below us, yeah, maybe it'll hide out in one of these areas, won't show up, and something will happen and won't be atyazalahadra. He won't come directly to him. Come on to some kabate. Therefore, the Kiddush, maybe, in the Bryce, again, this is conjecture, but maybe the Bryce is only telling us that much of a Kiddush, not to go all the way that Rob says it, just because the person will act on my behalf by being Makishab and Makel, I'm ready to accept responsibility as if I had made a community for that effect.
The person will say,
Are you a farmer? But you know that? Did you do farming on Levi too, or only a soldier? No, actually, it's not that rare because in a rural setting, basically, I mean, you go to Tzvat today. These guys let their parrot out in the morning. They go around all day long, all by themselves. Nobody looks at them. They come back at night, and it's just part of the Seder Ayom, and then it's fun. Yeah, if it's a place where it's used to coming, he's always in my cabbage patch. Why don't you let him go? I'll bet you'll end up there again. Now, we have to recognize that there's two separate issues that are involved in the Kinyan of the She'el. One is my acceptance of responsibility, which we've just seen can actually occur before I actually have a Kinyan on the cow or on the item that I'm being She'el, right? Correct? But the other is, at what point can the lender pull out? In other words, the same as in buying. A Kenyan achieves by buying the fact that it's done. So I can't change my mind, but until the Kenyan is done, I can change my mind. Now, the same thing is true of She'elah. We haven't distinguished between the two until now. We've only discussed at what point responsibility puts in. Nobody talked about the other question. At what point the Kenyan, in terms of the irrevocability of it, puts in. In which case, then the Mashiel can no longer say, you know, I changed my mind, I need it. So what? Well, you know, you want it to be, I'm sorry. Because, by the way, I mean, again, counterintuitively to Western sensibilities, but that would be the din, of course. She'ela is a type of transference relationship, and therefore it has all the legalities of any other transference relationship. The same way that you understand that if you rent a car, the rental company can't come along and say, we changed our mind, we'd like it back. The same thing is true if you borrow a car. The lending agency can't come in. Makes no difference. You get to, oh, but morally you're not paying, so please give it back. That's morally again. It has nothing to do with the dinim. This is a transaction, it's a legal transaction, the considerations have absolutely nothing to do with it. Again, in American law, they assume the morality to be part of the issue, to say in consideration of a sum of 50 cents that was spent to make it legal. Right? But over here, you don't need to make it legal. The borrowing makes it legal. But what is the formalization of the borrowing? That's the question. You never discussed the Kenyan. To talk about a guarantor, that's all very nice in terms of the acceptance of responsibility. It says nothing about when the guy could change his mind. And this is what the Gemara wants to introduce now. Somebody borrows a hatchet from a friend. Bakabo kano. If he uses it to chop something, then at that moment he would cone it. Lo bakabo, if he never used it, lo kano, then he never acquired it. Now, what are you talking about? Lamai. Acquire it for what? If you're talking about acquiring it for responsibility for accidents, that's crazy. The Mishnah never discussed usage. So Mishnah para de mishat sheila. Why does a para work from the moment that the sheila takes place? Could be all types of mechanisms over here, even though there was no actual opinion. No. He's talking about to be able to change your mind. But Kabo, once the borrower has used it, lo matiara be mashio, then the lender cannot change his mind. Lo bakabo, but as long as he has been used, mati mashiel hadave. The mashiel can change his mind, and this argues with Rabbani. Dom Rabbani hamashiel kardom shel hegdesh. Somebody who lends someone else a hatchet of hegdesh that was in his rishut, ma'al lefi tovat hana ashebo. He is moel. How much money worth meila? The value that one would be willing to pay to have the hatchet that you could lend to someone. It may be a very limited value, but it has a certain value. That value is what you'd have to pay hatchet. Plus, of course, the fifth.
Okay?
Not the value of the hatchet, because you didn't. The truth is, the hatchet per se, kavakana'a, is the value of doing a favor. No, I didn't do a job with it. I lent it. So that act of lending it was worth what to me? What would you pay to have a hatchet to be able to lend somebody? Right? In other words, what we assume, with the concept of Tovat Hana'a, what we assume is that any transaction is intercourse. It's not one way. If I'm lending you something, I'm getting something back. Now, that may be an intangible thing, which is your gratitude. But I'm getting exactly whatever it is. What would I be willing to pay for whatever it is that I'm getting? If I don't have a hatchet like that, if I could buy the right for lending a hatchet for 10 cents, would I pay 10 cents to be the guy that can lend the hatchet? Okay, so then that's the 10 cents that you took from Hegdesh. Now, at that point, however, it turns out that Chavero Mutar Levakei Abo L'Chatzila, that you also establish a kinyan for that purpose, in which case you were mostly the hatchet from Hegdesh for this purpose, and therefore the guy who borrows it could actually use it.
Oh, so even though he hasn't used it yet.
Ah, exactly. The Ilokano, my ma'al. He hasn't used it yet. And according to you, he not having used it, there was no transference at all. So then why was he Moa? And why would the guy be allowed to use it? I mean, it never was Yotzi from the Rishus of Hegdesh. So clearly, the very act of lending is a complete kinyan, and therefore it should be a complete kinyan over here. Well, according to you, Nahagri didn't let him give it back. Veloli today, let him never make the kinyan. Veloli go and not do the meila. It's absurd to say you should go ahead now and the chatzila use it. So this is the first thing that it's clear that Rav Huna argues about. Right? Because according to Rav Huna, you need an additional act of bikia. And he also argues on Rav Elazar. The Amr of Elazar, Kedar, Shetiknu Mishicha B'Lekuchot, Kach Tiknu Mishicha B'Shomrim. Rabbi Elazar says that there is a takana of Mishicha, just like the Rabbanan made a takana of Mishicha on buyers, so too did the Rabbanan make a takana of Mishicha on borrowers, on renters. So in the same way that you need to do the formal act of acquisition, of course, by a buyer, normally we would have said that the money would be the opinion. However, we had the famous background that you shouldn't say Nitzkufi Sekha Baliga to protect the market, so that in case of warehouse fires, it's not the responsibility of the buyer. So we said you have to make a formal act of acquisition other than the giving of the money, which would be a right to. As we turned to the open, it was a formal act of acquisition. Okay, but here he's saying the same thing is true of other types of transactions, including rentals, borrowings, and so on, that it would be sufficient to do a mishicha. Now, you'll note that there's a tremendous difference between Rav Elazar's position and between Rav Ami's position, because Rav Ami is saying you'd be over in the Ila, which is the Uraisa. Rav Elazar is saying that the mishicha would achieve a drabbana. It's a drabbana takana, it's not a Uraisa. I mean, that's the difference between them. But in any event, Ravuna's arguing on both, because he's saying neither the Uraisa nor the drabbana, you have the rights to it at this point. You would need to actually have gone ahead and used it, right? So if that's the case, then he's arguing on both of these sheets. Tanyanami Hawks, by the way, is a bride that supports Rav Elazar. Kishem shetiknu mishikha b'lekukot, kak shetiknu mishikha b'shomlin, u'kishem shikarta niknet, b'kesef u'bishtar u'b'kazaka, kak shirut niknet, b'kesef u'bishtar u'kazaka. Now, at this point, we thought, Shirut means shirut, in general, baro hatchet, which doesn't make sense at all. I mean, so shirut is mikne b'kesef b'shtar v'kazaka. The way karta is mikne b'kesef b'shtar v'kazaka. I mean, that's meth. Whoever heard of such a thing. Shirut, that's what you want. Shirut, my abominate. What do you mean? What do you mean? Without mikneh, what type of kazaka do I make on it? I mean, if I'm going to make a kazaka and a hammer, it's by hammering a nail, but then a bossy tub mishika. This is a very strange thing to say. I'm going to get to know, for heaven's sake, the root means the root of karka. The change of karka means in purchase, so too if you're renting land, you're renting a house, you also have the same exact formal acquisition you have in buying a house, or buying a field. You use also Kesher Shtar HaKadok. How much more? High man the god of Chavitza the Tamrei Mechavero. The Itva Chavishim Tamrei. And we'll see how we got on to this based on the figure that we were talking about a moment ago. Somebody steals a cluster of tamarim. Now, that's those, you know, that red, I forgot what they call it in English. But it's called a Chavitza anyway. You know, it's the red thing that hangs down with all the dates attached to it. Okay, let's assume now that it has 50 dates on it. And Agam Adadi, if you sell the whole kavitsa together, Nizavn and Bachamishin Nechichara, you would get 49 frutot for it, let's say. And then you sell it to a kid for 49 frutot, the kid opens up a little lemonade stand with marim, and he sells each tamar for a shekel. So he gets 50 shekels for it. So you make a buck. Koda over there, if you sell them one by one, Nizavn and Bachamishin. So Lehediot, if you stole this kavitsa from a non-Hegdish, you'd pay 49. But if you would be buying it from Hegdish, and you stole from Hegdish, you'd have to pay back the full 50, plus, of course, the knot of Hegdish, which is an additional chomesh, but a me'ila rukum shayim. Masha'in came to mazik, but this is not true of a mazik. A mazik of Hegdish doesn't pay an additional chomesh, only an actual meneh from Hegdish and Yishalim chomesh. Okay? Now, we just saw the interrelationship of the Hegdish over here and the Ila in the case of when we were contrasting Rav Ami's and Ravuna's. And this seems to relate to this issue, we'll see. And for some reason, we are distinguishing here between the dinim of Hegdish and the dinim of Hedya. Until now, we assumed that the two are related. We were bringing a raya from Mash'il of the Hegdish to the din of where you would be kona on She'elah. Now, if we're going to start applying different standards in what it is that I pay, who's to say that we don't apply different standards in terms of the kinyanim as well? Therefore, this is a very interesting ma'amar of Shmuel makes this distinction. And where would it come from? It's a very strange thing to say, isn't it? So now that's what the Gemara now explains. Now, I understand the part about the mazik doesn't pay chomesh, the amamar ishi yochaka, prat la mazik. Fine. But Mashiva Rabibi Barabai attacked this position of Shmuel. What are you saying? Why can he get away with saying 49? Why can't he say, look, this thing I was going to sell, this thing was worth 50 shekels, 50 putos to me. Amr is in a greater with Yeshua because, think for a moment, the din of mazik in general. I mean, a ganav is a mazik, right? He's listed in the avot nizikin. It's a type of hezik. So, how do we estimate normally the price of hezik? We never look at the item that you damage directly. Say you go into a guy's garden and you eat up a row of cabbages. I guess you're going into the garden, might as well get something better than cabbage, huh? Well, you might see a coleslaw free. Strawberry. There we go. You eat up a patch of strawberries, right? So we don't say you pay for the value of the strawberries that you eat. Rather, you take a particular area of a baked sa'ah, or, according to Tosis, an actual sa'ah, meaning a growing sa'ah, and you analyze the difference in the value of that with or without what it is that I took out, which is significantly less than what I actually took. Besides, I was... I understand, but you have the same thing here. 50 things together. Now the guy's saying, I would have made. Very good. You got the strawberries, and I would have made. You see that the Torah is made on the Tashlum in the Vedic. No. I pulled it off the tree. But it wouldn't matter. It wouldn't matter over here. Because as long as the act of Geneva, what we're saying here is that we're not making a direct comparison to say that we took it necessarily from a chur, but what we're saying is that we see that the Torah is maker of the Tashlumim of Mazik, that we don't owe you what you lost. That's the point. We owe you what you stole. Now, okay, fine, you're right. There's a difference between the analysis of Mechor and non-Mechor. But the general idea of what it is that you could have made doesn't define what it is that you pay. That's true. So it doesn't matter. Even if I'm not mamish analyzing this Mechor, I still have to take this claw. That the Torah is Mechor in these kind of Tashlumim. And therefore, the same thing would be true over here. So in other words, we're ready to look at the total picture. The total picture is a chavitza. A chavitza you could buy for 49 putas. Who cares? You would have made more money off of it. Okay, so therefore, what we do is, the halacha over there would be that you take shomim beit sa'abo tasadeh. Okay, so if that's the case, that's what it says in the Mishnah. But this would mean, in general, getting back to what Shmuel says, well, name of the Sava Shmuel dinei gyod lav kedin kavo adami. Are you telling me that according to Shmuel, the same standards do not apply to Hedyot as applies to Gavoa, where we pay 50, and to Hedyot we pay 49? What about the Mishnah? It says in the Mishnah, Natal Evan Okorami Hedyot. Now this Mishnah is referring to a Gizbar. The Gizbar has the right to have Hedyot. And anything that he does with it, as long as it remains within his rishus, is still in the rishus of Agnish, because he hasn't transferred it out since he is a gizbar. So therefore, if he picks it up and takes it from Agnish, he's not taking it from Agnish because he's a gizbar. Lo ma'al. But if he gives it to somebody else and he's transferring it out of his rishus, then he is mo'el, whereas the chaver is not mo'el. Suppose he takes this evan, or korav Agnish, and he builds it into his house, and over there, it says that, it's partnered out over there, that he puts it over an area that it's still recoverable. There's no shielding the actual thing. So he's not moral unless he actually is dead at it. In other words, he uses it to cover a hole in his roof. Take the Quran, covers a hole in his roof. So fine, take it off. Big deal. But if he goes, moves into the house, and lives under it, to the point that it's worth a shovel of fruit, that the pleasure that he derives from it, the benefit he derives from it, he pays a shovel of fruit. Okay, so far that's nothing to do with our issue. Except what happened is that Rabbi Avu was sitting in front of Rabbi Yochanan when they discussed this Mishnah, and he quoted Shmuel. And guess what he said? He said, "Kamar Mishmei Shmuel, Zvot on the earth, we can derive from this din of Egdesh a din that would apply to Hedyot. Namely, that Hadar b'katar k'verosh shalom idato t'riklav oto sakha." You see from here, somebody moves into your house without your permission, and you'd have to pay it? How do I see that? Well, because you're telling me that deriving benefit, I mean, far as Eckes is concerned, it's exactly the same wood. What's the difference? It's the same wood as it always was. The difference is that I'm sitting under it and I'm being shaded by the sun. And what does that bother you? Why should I pay you for sitting under? You see from here that therefore that the owner of the house would say, hey, you were sitting under my roof. And the guy says, well, come on, I mean, what do you care? I mean, that's like I eat under your garage extension. Yeah, what's the difference to you? Why should I have to pay you? You see from here that you would have to pay him, because otherwise why do you have to pay Hector? So obviously Shmuel does maintain that Hector and Hector have the same dinim. Otherwise how could he make such an inference from the dinim of Hector's Hector? This is a contradiction. A minute ago, Shmuel said that we don't apply the same special limit for Hector's Hector. This one pays 50 and this one pays 49. And now we're saying that we derive directly one from the other. So, that's a real one there.
Hold on,
it's not there. All right, Rich. Listen, I'll tell you what we could do is we can go out sailing and do the Daf Yomi on the boat. I think that's great. You don't want to take a year trip around the world with shots. I mean, that's a great idea. I'll bet we could get a nice tour for it, huh? Guaranteeing around the world and around the Yama Talmud and the Yama Olam in 1 year. Oh, man. This would be such a killer tour. Huh? I really think it would work. I just don't think my wife would go along with it. Yeah, maybe there'd be something left when we came back. So, anyway. Yes, so you see from here that Shmuel apparently has contradicted himself. Says the Gemara, how about Shmuel Me'ahi? Shmuel indeed had parota from that derivation. How do you know that he had parota from that? Maybe he had parota from the other assumption that he made. There's a difference between paying hedge and paying hedge. None of us is anymore. We know that he had parota from that. You know why? Because it wasn't even a logical inference. Because as Rava pointed out that a hedge shalomi da'at is exactly the same as hedge of da'at. Remember, if a guy says to you, no, do not come into my house, and if you come into my house, I want $10. Obviously, you have to pay him $10. The only question over here is, did he avar? Where the guy didn't say anything. And you said, so I hid under your garage roof while it was raining. What's the skin off your back? Why should I have to pay for it? That's the question. If the guy says, look, I rent my garage to hobos like you, okay? You want to stay under my garage, it's $10 for the night. And so obviously you'd have to pay the $10. But when it comes to Hekdesh, where God is in charge, so first of all, he's already issued a general warning. Anybody who wants to use my Hekdesh stuff, pay $10 for the night. Right? Secondly, he knows. So it's like the owner standing there, basically. Therefore, you can't really compare the case at all. It's obvious that that's the case that Shmuel must have pulled the back on, because it didn't really make sense in the first place. Interesting, similar situation in terms of describing how much you could have made. There's a difference between a barrel of wine on the shuk day and a barrel of wine not on the shuk day. Because on the shuk day, you know that you're going to be able to make a certain amount of money from it. So it turns out that the human shuk is davnuk chamisha. On a shuk day, it's worth 5 zuz. But the shire yume on other days, it's worth only 4 zuz. So the truth is that it would depend when they give it back to him. How do you lay the yume shukha? Madhurakali to the founder. If they're going to give him back the barrel of wine on the day of the shuk, they pay him back the barrel of wine. But the and that represents now the additional value. Whereas if they're mahadrulay b'shar yumi, then mahadrulay should say arba'ah. Then they would pay him only 4, which is the value. As long as he didn't have wine to sell, and therefore he can claim, I was planning on selling. If he had wine that he doesn't bother selling, then he can't say, I was planning on selling. Why didn't you sell? He should have sold it. And, of course,
who should have sold it?
The owner. He had other wine. Why didn't you sell the other one? He said, well, I was waiting for your wine to arrive. Oh, what is that supposed to mean?
Well, he might have been able to sell that as well.
But he didn't even bother selling what he had.
So
it's a question, and I'll tell you like it was not on a trip day. You obviously weren't going to use the trip day.
Well, they used the money or
actual money? Money. I'll give you only four. You've been made by the night, but by the way, I mean, I'm also saving you money, right? Because I mean, your work is worth something, isn't it? You would have had to sell, you would have to work. Okay, let's deduct the value of your work. So this rule that boils down to what? About that's why we wrote the Shah or something like that.
No, although not the vote,
not the vote. No, not the vote, could be only Garmi.
And
the Nevi'im tonight. Remember that you have to hire somebody, to hire a professional to puncture a pottery barrel and to install a faucet the way they would usually do. Yeah, these guys going around with a little bonus, you know.
Have to see a professional.
Yeah. Well, professional, the Arabs take a lot for that kind of stuff.
Why did he return wine? Can he return five?
It's okay. I return the equivalent of the wine that you would have sold it, and then that's returning it to you.
I assume that he said that he probably in the field, and I guess you're not killed, but if you get the guy at 10 bucks of the stove, and I saw what